It is Thursday, August 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, dies at her home in Detroit, Michigan, following a long illness. Italian government leaders call the collapse of the bridge in Genoa manslaughter. And President Donald Trump and Democrats face a different political landscape after the midterm elections. It's all ahead. A musical legend has died. The Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, died at her Detroit, Michigan home following a long struggle with cancer. She was 76. VOA's Nikki Strong joins me to talk about the immense impact Aretha Franklin had on both music and society.
There's no one like her. She was one of a kind. I mean, Aretha was like a protege, like what she was able to do with her voice, the intelligent way that she would sing, aside from like, it sounded like she took you to another place. So you heard life in her voice and all of the ups and downs in it. She was also a very skillful musician on top of that. And a lot of people, she really, her song, Respect, is what made everybody take notice of Aretha. That was her first number one hit that hit both on the R&B charts, number one, and on the pop charts. And as you know, it was a major, became an anthem for both the civil rights movement and for the feminist movement. And this is interesting about this song. It was originally done by Otis Redding. So here was a song about a man talking to a woman and saying, you know, sock it to me, I want respect, you know. And she decided to flip it. And not only did she just flip the song and become a woman demanding respect, she also rearranged the entire song. She did the background vocals. She gave it a totally different groove. And so the song itself was really a testament to her talent and her genius. Not only did she make it into something that no one had ever heard before, you know, but making it something that also just resonated across the board. She said she was surprised that it hit number one. She recently did an interview in Elle magazine in the past couple of years. And there are a couple of things that she shared in that interview. One of them was that she had written into her contract in the 60s that she would never perform for a segregated audience.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And she was glad that that song became linked to feminist and civil rights movements. She said that line, you know, I've got it. She said, has a direct feminist theme. And she said, as women, we do have it. We have the power. We are very resourceful. Women absolutely deserve respect. I think women and children and older people are the three least respected groups in our society.
Yeah, she was very much an activist.
Yeah, she was. She was. Her father was an activist, a civil rights activist. He was a very well-known activist and preacher. C.L. Franklin, New Bethel Church out of Detroit, New Bethel Baptist Church. And a lot of the civil rights leaders, you know, frequented his house. When he needed her to come and sing at a particular event, she was there. She frequently toured with King. He was the one that organized this interesting piece of information, the 1963 Detroit Walk to Freedom, which was the largest civil rights demonstration in U.S. history until the March on Washington. And Martin Luther King, at that Detroit Walk to Freedom, did an earlier version of the I Have a Dream speech. This is an interesting piece of activist information about her and Angela Davis. Angela Davis, she was a member of the Communist Party. She was a civil rights activist, and she was arrested and jailed for what were found to be wrongful kidnapping and murder charges. And Aretha wanted to cover her bail, no matter what it was, whether it was $100,000 or $250,000. And this is a direct quote from her. She said, my daddy says I don't know what I'm doing. Well, I respect him, of course, but I'm going to stick to my beliefs. Angela Davis must go free. Black people must be free. Jail is hell to be in. I'm going to set her free if there is any justice in our courts, not because I believe in communism, but because she's a black woman and she wants freedom for black people. I have the money. I got it from black people. They've made me financially able to have it, and I want to use it in ways that will help our people.
I've just heard in recent days, apparently she, very much on the quiet, paid for the funerals mm-hmm. of some elderly Motown musicians who otherwise they couldn't afford that. She
yeah.
did that.
Yeah. And Aretha did stuff, a lot of stuff on the DL, even like her, I think her last performance was for an AIDS benefit.
Yeah.
So she was very much aware of the power of her voice and the platform and to use it to help others. You know, and I think even that statement about Angela Davis speaks to the feminist, you
yeah.
know, and
yeah.
you know, and the civil rights movement for African Americans. So I think that she changed the way the world sang. If you listen to the greats, and even people who are great now, they go back to Aretha. They say there's nothing like Aretha. So many people who are incredible vocalists, like even when I think of some of these pop singers, like a Kelly Clarkson. You know, when she was on American Idol, one of the songs that helped her win was Aretha Franklin's You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman. When I first heard that she was gravely ill, I immediately thought about the performance that she did for the Kennedy Center Honors, where she did You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman to honor Carole King.
Yeah, Carole King wrote the song.
So many people have done this song, Celine Dion, so many people have remade the song. But when Aretha took that stage, she did this song in a way I had never heard before, which speaks to like her musicianship and her intelligence, you know, and her phrasing, what she did vocally with her voice, it put all of us on our feet. I was watching on television and I stood up with the audience. It was like, oh my God, this woman is amazing. And you can't help but realize that's why you have to bow down. That's why she is the queen. Yes, she's had, you know what, had 18 Grammys, and she was the first woman inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and she has, you know, all of those accolades. But her raw talent and what she is able to do with music itself, no one has been able to really hold a light to.
VOA's Nikki Strong. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. The White House says the United States is crushing it on economic growth. A jury starts deliberating the Paul Manafort fraud case. The U.S. media launches a coordinated defense of press freedom. And India's former Prime Minister Vajpayee dies after a long illness. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists from the Georgia Institute of Technology have found that two Earth-like exoplanets maintain a stable tilt on their axis like the Earth does, suggesting the planets have regular seasons and a steady climate. One of the planets is Kepler-186f, which is the first Earth-sized exoplanet identified that is orbiting its star within its habitable zone. Kepler-186f, which was discovered in 2014, is about 550 light-years from Earth. The second planet, discovered in 2013, is Kepler-62f. This exoplanet, described as a super-Earth-sized planet, orbits its star that is approximately 1,200 light-years away. The Georgia scientists say that an axial tilt plays an important role in a planet's seasons and climate because it affects how sunlight hits the planet's surface. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we look at the continuing tensions between the United States and Turkey. Rescuers continue their search for possible survivors and bodies of victims of Tuesday's highway bridge collapse in Italy. The death toll is at 38, but authorities say some people are still unaccounted for, and no one is prepared to call off the search and rescue operation. Hundreds of people have been evacuated from their homes near parts of the bridge that remain standing. Sabina Castelfranco has more from Rome.
The city of Genoa's chief prosecutor has said there may still be 10 to 20 people missing and not all the recovered bodies have been identified. Sniffer dogs and large earth movers are being used to search around large chunks of concrete in the debris of the collapsed bridge. Family members of those unaccounted for still hope a miracle may have kept their loved ones alive. Meanwhile, hundreds of people have been evacuated from homes near parts of the bridge left standing, and we're told they may never be able to go back to their homes. Authorities said the homes might have to be torn down, along with the remaining bridge, which will then be rebuilt. Italian Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte met with Deputy Prime Ministers Matteo Salvini and Luigi Di Maio and the Infrastructure Minister Danilo Toninelli to take immediate measures following the disaster.
Abbiamo decretato lo stato di emergenza.
Conte declared a state of emergency for the northern port city of Genoa for 12 months and earmarked $5.6 million from national emergency funds for removal of remaining parts of the bridge and redeveloping the road system. He also said Italians would observe a national day of mourning Saturday when state funerals will be held for the victims. The Prime Minister also announced the government has begun the process of revoking the contract of the company managing Italy's highway system. The firm, Autostrade per l'Italia, said it carried out regular maintenance and safety checks on the bridge that gave reassuring results. A criminal investigation has been launched to ascertain the cause of the collapse. Prosecutors are investigating negligence in maintenance and the bridge's design. Genoa Chief Prosecutor Francesco Cozzi said it is a disaster caused by human failure and those responsible will be liable for manslaughter. Experts like Antonio Brancic, a professor of construction at Genoa University, had warned 2 years ago the bridge was in need of being replaced, but his message was not heeded. Since its completion in 1967, the number of vehicles and weight load on the bridge each day significantly increased. Local residents had also long complained the bridge was unsafe. Speaking on national television, this Genoa resident said it was an expected tragedy because every day she traveled on it, she could feel it move. She added that there was always some repair going on. Even in recent days, workmen were busy on the bridge. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
Turkey's currency, the lira, has rebounded with the help of a pledge by Qatar for $15 billion in direct investment in the Turkish economy. The lira has recovered from a severe loss last week, the result of investor alarm over high debt, double-digit inflation, and the government's refusal to lift interest rates. The situation worsened with U.S. tariffs and sanctions. The two countries have had a running dispute over a demand that exiled Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen be extradited and the long detention of Americans, including Protestant pastor Andrew Brunson, accused of assisting in the attempted coup and aiding Kurdish separatists. Anthony Billingsley, Mideast lecturer at the University of New South Wales, tells International Edition's Victor Beattie, President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's style of leadership appears to be driving these tensions.
Erdogan has been frustrated with the position of Europe and the United States criticizing his human rights performance. His vendetta against Gulen, the cleric who lives in Pennsylvania, has become obsessive, especially since the failed coup of a few years ago. It's manifesting now in a number of ways. One is in northern Syria, where the Turks have actually threatened to attack U.S. soldiers who are operating in the area, where Turkey's policy on Syria has been shown to be pretty threadbare.
Turkey's foreign minister this week struck a somewhat conciliatory note, saying his government is prepared to discuss issues and disagreements with the U.S. as long as there are no threats. Will one or the other of these two countries, the U.S. and Turkey, climb down from this escalating tension?
It's hard to see Erdogan doing it. The man seems to be driven by hubris. He's just had a big election victory. It's given him all the power that he's been demanding over a number of years. and he's not known for backing off. The other issue between the two sides is the contagion of economic decline, that Turkey has benefited from low interest rates, and this is part of the problem, but then so have a lot of other countries, Argentina, Spain, Italy, countries like this, so that, you know, we could see a whole raft of really difficult economic situations developing. Now, that's not in the U.S.'s interests.
Much of the tension seems to surround one man, a Protestant minister from the U.S., who's been in Turkey over 20 years, has been incarcerated for nearly 2 years on suspicion, charges actually, that he was somehow involved in the failed 2016 coup. Is it amazing to you that a relationship that goes back decades, the U.S. and Turkey, would come down to one man?
It is amazing. Again, this comes down to the personality, I think, of Erdogan. Andrew Brunson has also been accused of aiding and abetting Kurdish rebels. And I mean, the charges are preposterous. And I think Erdogan is so obsessed about Gulen that he will do whatever to try to force the U.S., despite U.S. law, to hand over Gulen to him. It's an emotional thing as much as anything.
Anthony Billingsley, Mideast Lecturer at the University of New South Wales. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in. Feast your ears and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This is International Edition. In less than 3 months, U.S. voters will cast ballots in midterm congressional elections that could alter the course of Donald Trump's presidency. The results from recent primary and special elections reveal a political landscape that features energized Democrats, dedicated Trump supporters, and a sense that a polarized country is headed for a major political showdown in November. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
It's a brand new day.
Outside the White House, Trump opponents, including comedian Rosie O'Donnell,
let your voice be heard,
gather for an event that is both protest and performance art.
Let the president know, in no uncertain terms, that we are alive, awake, and we are woke. We are not going away.
Results from recent primaries and special elections show Democrats are mobilizing for November with a distinctly anti-Trump message. Senator Bernie Sanders.
People are standing up, they are fighting back, and they are going together transform this country politically and economically.
Welcome. President Donald Trump has launched an aggressive campaign effort on behalf of Republicans, hoping to counter predictions of a blue wave of Democratic gains.
America is respected again, and America is winning again. Because we are finally putting America first.
This message resonates with Trump's base, including Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan.
The embassy is gone to Jerusalem, and the hostages have been returned from North Korea. That's what's happened under the president's leadership. Thank you very much.
But in the midterms, Trump and the Republicans face an uphill battle, says analyst John Fortier.
So I think they'll get some of their voters out, but I think it'd be hard to overcome the enthusiasm on the Democratic side. So a very good chance the Democrats will take the House of Representatives, or if not, they will gain quite a number of seats.
While Trump may help some Republicans in November, there is also the risk that he motivates Democrats, warns John Hudak.
In many races throughout the country, the president's input is likely to be more harmful than good for a Republican candidate, and the president would be best served to be wary about which districts and states he goes into.
Polls show while working-class voters largely remain with Trump, many women and suburban voters are likely to turn away from Republicans, says analyst Michael Barone.
In the House, it's clear that a lot of high education, upscale voters have got very strong negative feelings about Donald Trump and the Republican Party. They're eager to vote.
It's now becoming increasingly clear that activists from both parties see the midterms as a national referendum on the Trump presidency. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thank you so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Last year, the administration of President Donald Trump unveiled its Indo-Pacific strategy, built around the concept of a strong coalition of like-minded regional democracies advancing a free, open, and rules-based order. On July 30th, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo launched the strategy's economic and commercial pillars. The Trump administration is committed to expanding our economic engagement in the Indo-Pacific region, he said. U.S. business engagement is a staple of our mission to promote peace, stability, and prosperity.
Our strategy seeks to catalyze American business to do what they do best. President Trump also expects our commitment to generate greater support for a free and open Indo-Pacific from all countries that share our vision of a region rooted in sovereignty, the rule of law, and sustainable prosperity.
The United States is dedicating $113 million toward new U.S. initiatives to support foundational areas of the future, digital economy, energy, and infrastructure. These funds represent just a down payment on a new era in U.S. economic commitment to peace and prosperity in the Indo-Pacific region. The secretary stated that the first initiative is the Digital Connectivity and Cybersecurity Partnership, a $25 million initial investment to improve partner countries' digital connectivity and expand opportunities for U.S. technology exports. The second initiative, Asia Edge, stands for Enhancing Development and Growth Through Energy. Through Asia Edge, we will invest nearly $50 million this year alone to help Indo-Pacific partners import, produce, move, store, and deploy their energy resources. Finally, to boost infrastructure development, the Secretary announced that the United States is launching an Infrastructure Transaction and Assistance Network, a whole-of-government initiative seeded with nearly $30 million for the establishment of a new interagency body to coordinate U.S. government tools to promote infrastructure development. This initiative also establishes a new Indo-Pacific Transaction Advisory Fund to help partner countries access private legal support and other expertise as needed to help Indo-Pacific countries during complex project negotiations. Our Indo-Pacific vision excludes no nation. We seek to work with anyone to promote a free and open Indo-Pacific, so long as that cooperation adheres to the highest standards that our citizens demand, said Secretary Pompeo. The United States is committed to growing our presence in the region because we want Americans and all people of the Indo-Pacific to share in the economic growth of 2020, 2030, 2040, and beyond.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.